the snapping. It's time for the Big Ben Gillette Show. We're in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I'm sitting here with Michael Dudeau, star of the Lance Burton Show. Even though it's named the Lance Burton Show, he's still the star. It's actually the Lance Burton Show starring Michael Dudeau.
That's right.
We're gonna be here in Vegas, just talking. We got a lot to talk about today. I want to report on, for those of you who are loyal listeners and listened yesterday, you knew that I was going into my Playboy adventure, my adventure in Playboy modeling. I'm gonna report back on that. I actually had 2 hours, and I went to see V is for Vendetta last night. So anybody that wants to talk about that, it's the number one movie in the country, and I've seen it. You know how rare that is? You know the last time I saw the number one movie in the country? I don't know when that was.
Yours.
Probably when it was probably Apocalypse Now was the last time I saw the number one movie in the country. So I've seen V for Vendetta because I was told by my good friend Cyan that... she said it was a libertarian movie. And certainly the slogan, people should not be afraid of the government should be afraid of the people, is a perfectly libertarian statement. But I want to talk about a movie starring a terrorist 5 years after the biggest terrorist attack on American soil. Pretty cool. I mean, that gives me faith in the country that we have such freedom of speech that we can celebrate terrorism in those words. In V for Vendetta,
makes
which is the
patriotic.
Interesting thing. It's not like you go, we'll also talk about patriotism, because we did not answer that question yesterday.
We never will.
But first, of course, and we got some great answers for people who want to report on the John Lennon thing. I would like, and of course, you know, this is like, I don't have as much muscle as Prince, you know. Prince asked everybody in his audience to wear a peach. And then they did, kind of, sort of. He also got in trouble, you know, because he painted this house purple. Did you read that in the news?
No.
Prince, who's a nut, he's a Jehovah Witness now.
Really?
Yeah, he's a Jehovah Witness now. So he does all the same sexy songs, but they're all about monogamy. Woo! He's out there. He's a Jehovah Witness. And
Little Red Corvette is all of a sudden about a little red Corvette.
And, you know, Happy Jack just asked me if I dated Prince, but I do have a story that relates to dating and Prince, and I'll get to that in a moment. But there's this news story. He rented a house in Beverly Hills for like $70,000 a month, and he painted it all purple and changed all the plumbing to run to his salon chairs he has for, I guess, doing his hair. He ran the plumbing. And the guy who owns the place. It's on Google News. It's like one of the big stories. You're looking down at your computer like, oh, I'm going to bust him on this. This is a fever dream he had. He spends all night dreaming about Prince painting mansions purple. Then he tells me about it as though it were news. Well, it is news, smarty pants
sure
communist.
Is.
Okay, good. The story I have about dating Prince was I used to date this model who before me dated the keyboard player in Prince. With Prince, not in Prince. I don't even think I can say that. I don't even think Oprah Winfrey can say that. In the new power generation, the keyboard player, he was. And she was at Prince's house. And the only people at Prince's house were the keyboard player, his girlfriend, which would later be my girlfriend, Prince, and then a few people who were working at the house. But really, Prince is alone at the house pretty much, except for friends. And they are lounging out by the pool, okay? And Prince comes down in full makeup and hair with, like, this full, like, gown on. You know, this big, like a bathrobe dressing gown type thing to go to his own pool at his own home with no one there. And they weren't even going out that day. So Prince, to go down to the pool, spends time with Meg. I mean, there is committing yourself to being a nut, you know? It's like when we used to go to things with Siegfried and Roy, you know? It was so awful. I'd bump into Siegfried and Roy on the street, you know? And Roy would be wearing, like, boots made from endangered species, and he'd be wearing, like, a fringe jacket, and Siegfried being, like, a taffeta moo-moo. I don't know what either of those words mean, but he was wearing this thing. And they would come in looking like, you know, like Liberace and Prince, you know, holding hands, just a pure showbiz, you know? And we'd be going to a function that we we had a yeah, because we were both stars in Las Vegas, you know. And I would show up in, like, you know, a T-shirt and jeans that were, like, ripped and, like, boots. And I'd walk up, and Roy would give me this look. Now, he's the one wearing, like, you know...
the taffeta muumuu.
Well, no. Roy would be wearing, like, you know, eagle skin boots. You know, American eagle skin boots. And he'd be wearing, like, you know, leather pants with the crotch out and chaps over it. And, you know, and just, like, you know, buckskin. And then jewelry and turquoise. And his hair dyed and spiked and all this stuff going on. And he would look at me.
Hair extensions. I've seen that on him.
He'd see me in jeans and a T-shirt, and he'd look at me like, what's wrong with you? You know, it's like we're at Hot Dog on a Stick, you know. We're working at Hot Dog on a Stick, and Siegfried's got the striped shirt on with a little hat, you know, and Roy's got the striped shirt with a little hat, and then I'm standing there dressed as a fireman. You know, it's like I'm dressed for the wrong job. So when Roy got injured, mm-hmm. when Roy got his head torn off by a tiger, the tiger, of course, was trying to help him, as Siegfried explains.
Lower his blood pressure.
Yeah, that's what Siegfried said. Siegfried actually believed that the tiger could sense Roy's high blood pressure, and therefore tore his head off.
His tail was wrapped around his upper arm. He was checking his blood pressure just before. Just counting the pulse.
I have high blood pressure, and I've been to the Mayo Clinic. Well, actually, not the Mayo Clinic. That's really in Chicago. I was at the in the Midwest. I was at the Miracle Whip Clinic, okay. Which is the one in Arizona, and the Miracle Whip Clinic. And none of the doctors, these are the best doctors in the world on high blood pressure. Not one of them suggested ripping my head off.
Well, you haven't been to the zoo, have you?
I haven't been to the zoo. The zoo doctors.
The recommendation is you meet a white tiger in an alley somewhere.
I don't think I've told this story to actually anybody, but it was an important story to me. So Roy got his head torn off by a tiger. And over the 20 years before that, I've been making fun of Roy all the time. You know, every radio show I'd go on, anything, I'd make fun of Roy and Siegfried. You know, Siegfried and Roy I would make fun of. And we made fun of him in our show. There were a lot of jokes. As we've said before, everybody had to rewrite their act.
Well, this is like the Carrot Top thing.
Yeah.
You're perpetuating this myth about Siegfried and Roy.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, Carrot Top turned out to be a good guy.
It's so Siegfried and Roy.
You know, my mom heard the show and she said, God, I feel so bad. I just jumped on this I Hate Carrot Top bandwagon, and then you had him on the show, and he was so nice, and now I feel really badly
about it. I've never said anything about Siegfried and Roy except making fun of them. I made fun of them as professionals that are professional at being made fun of. Siegfried and Roy, when I would go on radio, you know, I'd go on Steve Dahl's show in Chicago, you know, the one that's on after us? I'd go on that show, and I would trash them, right? And I would get a call from Siegfried going, thank you for mentioning us on the radio. Very funny, very funny. I could not say anything about them that would make them be any angry at all. And they took me to lunch. We had a great time. I've always, when I've gone backstage at their show, always gracious and wonderful. And they understand that part of show business is that guys like me are going to make fun of guys like them. And that doesn't mean I didn't respect them and love them. I mean, they invented an art form. You know, people think that wild animals and magic has been like something that's always been around. That's not true. It was invented on a cruise ship, you know, by a couple of guys. Roy was a cabin boy. Siegfried was a cheesy magician. And Roy was pining away that he couldn't bring his ocelot on the trip with him. And they got to chatting, could you do this with wild animals? And they made this art form. And also Roy created, you know, in the days of, you know, Frank Buck and the wild animal shows, you know, Clyde Beatty, Cole Brothers and stuff, it was always, you know, king of the wild animals and beat them with a chair and a stick and I dominate them. And Roy did this whole thing of, you know, the little pussycats, I love them, and, you know, living with them and riding them around.
Friend of the tigers.
And I used to always say the amazing thing about Roy was he never got tagged because he did never get hurt. Still, his head got
ripped
off.
Except that one time.
Yeah. But before that, he didn't. So I love Siegfried and Roy and made fun of them a lot. And I always felt, you know, I always feel that when people pay money to see our show, you know, they come and they pay, like, our show's like $75. That's a fair amount of change. One of the cheaper shows in Vegas. You know, we try to keep the price down. But that's a lot of coin. You know, you're dropping a buck and a half for you and a date to come see our show. And you give that money, and you're paying that money, first of all, for the show, right? And then you pay for the sets and the props and all the work that goes into it. But also, you know, you're making the people that are the star of that show a little bit better off than other people, a little bit more wealthy. And you think about how they're going to spend that money, and I think that you are, there's an unwritten contract that you make with the audience that if they give you money, you will be a nut. You will be insane. I don't think they're giving me that money so that I can invest it wisely, you know, and live sensibly. I think they're giving me that money so that I'll be caught in a hot tub with a 14-year-old boy with drugs they've never heard of, dressed entirely in American Eagle feathers. I mean, that's the kind of thing you want. That's why Michael Jackson, Liberace, Siegfried and Roy, you know, these people are your real stars. They're the people you want to hear about, you know, and the people like Bob Dylan, who are geniuses, but then live a life that's, you know, he's nutty on stage. He kind of does everything. He does the nutty and the normal, but they're not asking people to show up at major openings in Vegas in jeans and a t-shirt. So after Roy got his head ripped off and I was down at the hospital and I was very, very upset, the way that I kind of showed a weird kind of respect was I went to Versace and I bought a pair of leather pants.
I remember this.
That cost as much as a car. I mean, really expensive leather pants. And I bought this really expensive Versace shirt, right?
That sharkskin thing,
Spent a lot of money, a lot of coin on it. And the leather pants were expensive and made of, like, I don't know, probably embryonic, you know, calf skin. It was really, they were very, very light, and they, you know, they
veal.
Just
had all it's made veal. Of veal.
It was veal. It was veal leather, and it felt great, and it looked, you know, really cool.
Really good with butter.
And I put a little bit of lemon. I had Bacanti pants. And I put on this outfit, you know? I put on this outfit, and I comb my hair, which I never do when I'm not on stage. Comb my hair, put on this Versace shirt and Versace pants, and I walked around the Mirage, you know? And people would look over and go, oh, there's Penn of Penatella.
Oh, no, it's not Roy.
That's Penn of Penatella. But for some reason, and I'm not in any way lying or setting up a joke or anything. For some reason... For some reason, that felt really important to me. It was like saying to Roy, okay, all these years, you were right, I was wrong. And for, you know, a while, I was wearing those leather pants all the time. You saw me.
Until we ate them.
at the Versace shirts and stuff. And it was the way I should be. You know, I just feel like what I do is wrong. You know, what I do sitting around in gym shorts and a t-shirt. Prince coming down to the pool, you know, with full makeup and hair. I mean, that's the kind of, I mean, and I'm crazy enough for people, you know. I mean, I have political opinions and I have personal habits that are nutty enough for the world. But it should also reflect in my, in the way I carry myself. I mean, I do get my hair dyed. I went in yesterday. Well, actually, the way I put it is I had gray highlights put in. And I wasn't really happy with the gray highlights, so I had them removed. So yesterday, the Playboy shoot. I guess everybody who listens to the show knows that God hates me. So what happened was the second the Playboy shoot was supposed to start, it began raining,
and
hailing, snowing.
It was snowing here.
In Vegas, it was snowing. And so I go out, and in my little bathroom out by the hot tub where the Jill Jet is, my hydrotherapeutic stimulator, there is a Playboy model in a pink jumpsuit, like from Central Casting. And she's very, very small. She's like the size of Prince. And she's wearing a little, and she has so much makeup on, you know. And the Playboy guys, who are all from Chicago and all know Tony, you know. It's all like, yo, you know Tony, you know Steve Dahl. Ah! So it's all Chicago time, right? They're all talking Chicago. And they say that it's too snowy and miserable for her to be outside. So they're going to shoot me separate and then Photoshop me. Now, this is how much God hates me, okay? There is a naked, gorgeous woman who wants to get naked in the hot tub. And they say, you know, Penn, you don't have to bother doing that. We'll Photoshop you in. So they set up in my garage. They set up for me to just stand there. While she's over there in her tracksuit all bundled up, and I'm just posing as though I'm looking at her. And they go, oh, yeah, we'll just put it in Photoshop. And she keeps pushing. She keeps saying, we can do it, we can do it. And then in this moment, I guess when Xenu took power over God for a moment, the sun breaks through, okay? And I'm in a suit, and we go out to my hot tub, and she's out there in a robe. And of course, we introduce her to my daughter. Because when you've got a playmate around, the thing you want to do is put a 9-month-old baby, because this is like a buffet, you know, for a 9-month-old. You know, she's got these, she's got Tupperware implanted under the skin of her chest. It's just Tupperware. I mean, there's not even pretending.
Spot the upgrade.
Not even pretending to be silicone. I mean, you could put an apple in there and it would stay fresh for like, you know, 3 weeks. You could just like, you could snap and then you could see the scar under her nipple where you would burp it. You know, that's where you would burp the breast.
And it just Velcro and, on and off.
So Moxie, you know, my daughter, is just like, you know, I mean, even though, you know, my wife is pregnant again, so there's no shortage of breastage around the slammer now, my house. But, isn't that cute? Isn't she cute? So we go out, and she takes off her robe, and it's great, you know, because she looks exactly like the Playmates, only they're all smaller than you think, you know. She's about 5 feet tall. She probably weighs like 100 pounds.
So she doesn't have large breasts. She's just tiny.
Tiny, yes, yes. Her breasts are probably the size of your nose.
Yeah, right.
But she's like Barbie, you know? Barbie looks like she has big breasts, but they're only the size of a pimple, really. It's all special relativity. She gave Einstein the idea. And so then I'm standing on the back of the hot tub in my suit pointing at her, and she's on top of the Jill Jet, which is the hydrotherapeutic stimulator that I have a patent for that is supposed to pleasure women. And they say, slide down more under the seat, and she goes, there's a jet down there. So I'm trying to explain, no, not a bug, a feature. Not a bug, a feature. This is a good thing. Just lower yourself onto it. And she was, you know, living the Playboy lifestyle. She was wild, uninhibited. She wasn't even naked. You know, she had a thong on, but she was under the foam, so you'll never know at home. And we posed for pictures, but she would not lower herself onto the seat to actually take a trip to Wonderville, you know, in front of us. She was good at faking that. You know, that's what she did for a living. So we get in there, and she says, and this is the thing that'll kill you. She says, like, out of the blue, she's making conversation. She says, you know, my fiancé is a plastic surgeon. And I said, well, how'd you meet him? And I said, did he do your, and then I used a slang term you're not supposed to use on the radio.
Sure.
And she said, yes, he did my breasts. I said, good. They look
He's
very
an
good.
Artist.
They look very good. He does Botox, he did my lips, he does everything. And she starts talking about this. And the amazing thing is, because there is no God and we live in a random universe full of pain, the real sexy woman was the makeup woman, mm-hmm. who was named Jody, and who was really gorgeous and sweet and wonderful. And I like Tiffany, too. Tiffany, of course. You can tell the
name. Tiffany?
Tiffany.
Tiffany, your name's Tiffany, really.
Her name was Tiffany, yeah, the Playboy.
You're lying to us
now.
No, I'm not. Sure you're lying. You know what the best part about it was? That she was so excited about the Martin Short robe.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't care at all about you. She really loved your Martin Short
robe. I have a Martin Short robe in that show. She put that on. She was very, very happy. And then I got into the hot tub with her, okay? And I'm kind of have my arms around her. In my suit. They kept me in the suit. We don't know whether that was aesthetic reasons or comedic reasons, but I was in the suit. And they're giving her directions. Like, open your mouth, pull your teeth back, pull your lips back from your teeth. Pull your lips back from your teeth. Pull your shoulders back, push out your breasts, throw your head back, let your hair fall over your back. Open your mouth a little bit, just a slight smile, close your eyes, just ecstasy. That's what the Chicago guy is saying. It's much funnier to say all that stuff with a Chicago accent. And I start following all the directions that they're giving her. I throw my hair back. I get it wet. I open my mouth. I'm doing this, like, you know, orgasm thing, like, you know, like she's. And so most of the pictures they took were my hair. We're back to back. And my hair is draped over her breasts. And I'm going like, you know, like some sort of.
Like Roy.
Like Roy. Exactly like Roy. And it was a great thing. And then there's a wonderful poetic moment where we're in the hot tub and it's very, very warm. And it starts hailing again. And I'm sitting out in my hot tub watching hailstones the size of, about half the size of a pencil eraser.
Sure.
Coming down and bouncing off the rubber plastic of her breast. Boink, 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 boink. And it's watching hailstones bounce off a Playboy model's breasts in my hot tub. There was just a moment of poetic beauty in that I just loved. I mean, how hard did I have to work in my life to be a boy from Greenfield, Massachusetts, and end up in Vegas in a hot tub watching hailstones
This is the reason people are buying tickets to your show, so that you can spend your money on these things.
Exactly.
It's beautiful.
Exactly. We'll be back to talk about patriotism. V is for Vendetta. Want to call up talk about either of those things? Maybe I got more to say about Playboy. I don't know. I'll think about it. But we'll be back. We'll be back right after this. 866-313-FREE. We're on Free FM, where hailstones are free to bounce off plastic breasts. Beautiful day here in Vegas. If it had been this beautiful yesterday, we wouldn't have had the beautiful hailstones bouncing off the plastic breast. She was very delightful. Tiffany was very delightful. And she was talking to me. And I told her that we had to shoot billboard pictures today. And she said, you know, my fiance, the plastic surgeon, do you have trouble with your billboards? I said, what do you mean? She said, well, you know, my fiance, the plastic surgeon, he does these billboards, and he does these ads that are, like, really racy. They have, like, a lot of nudity in them. And the AMA and all these, like, plastic surgeon organizations are coming down on him and busting him and giving him a really hard time. Do they do that with your billboards and ads? And I said, well, we're magicians. We wear suits. And she goes, I thought the AMA looked at all billboards. And I said, no, the AMA is the American Medical Association, and they're looking at his ads because he's a plastic surgeon, which is a doctor, and we're magicians, and there are different rules. And she said, oh. And I said, plus, there's no nudity in our bill. I don't know. So she's leaving afterwards, and when she's getting in the car, she goes, listen, here's my phone number if you want to get in touch with me, because maybe you want my fiance to do some Botox or do some. I said, do I look like I need plastic surgery? Can your fiance make me look like you? You know, and then she says, which I think was great. She says to me, well, you know, not necessarily you, but maybe your wife. And I go, okay.
When you hit her.
I said, first of all, my wife's breasts are four times the size of your head. She's not going to get little Tupperware implants put in there. And I said, she looks, and she goes, no, I didn't mean anything. Just, you know, it's not, no, you don't do surgery because things are wrong. Now it's just maintenance.
It's fun.
Now it's just maintenance to get Botox. And meanwhile, I was trying to talk to Jody, who was the makeup woman, who was the one that was really killing everybody. And when she took her slammer picture, you know, everybody that's over my house takes a slammer picture, takes a picture there.
Right.
Tiffany had to be talked into doing it topless, but Jody did it right away. Jody had no trouble featuring the non-Tupperware breast. We have a phone call still about Prince?
We do indeed.
I didn't expect to get a phone call about Prince, so I'll take that. And then we'll go with V for Vendetta. I put is in there, and there's not an is in there. Someone wrote to us and corrected
me. Okay, let's talk to Max on Line 6.
Hey, Max, what's up, man?
Hey, how's it going? I was just letting you know about this DVD called An Evening with Kevin Smith. You were talking about Prince earlier.
Yeah. I read his. There was an email circulating, right? There was a web page or something circulating with Kevin Smith talking about how nutty Prince was, right?
Yeah. He launched in like a 45-minute spiel on a simple question about how he was supposed to do a documentary for Prince.
Uh-huh.
And apparently that theatrical costume he's wearing, it's not just for when anyone's over his house. He wears that whenever, and he's always in heels because he's not a tall man, and he always carries a Bible in his back pocket.
Yeah, I did a show with Prince in New York, and I was not allowed to go near him. Now, there might be several reasons why Prince wouldn't want me near him, but the reason they gave, the ostensible reason, was height, because I don't think he's crossing 5 foot, you know. And I'm 6'6", and I don't think he's 100 pounds. So, you know, and I'm knocking on three bills. So I'm about triple the size of Prince. So to me, he's the artist formerly known as Dinner. You know,
I want you to fall on him.
I could throw his ass in a microwave and he'd be a snack, you know. But he is tiny. He's a small guy. And I guess he does always dress like that and always made up like that. So Kevin Smith has a DVD where he talks about it.
It's called An Evening with Kevin Smith. It's a college Q&A about his movies, and someone just mentions that he did a documentary with him, which will never see the light of day because apparently he does recordings of, like, music videos and documentaries of himself and locks them in a vault, never releases them.
Yeah, I knew he did that. He does them, like, often, too, like yearly. And so what do you have the high points of, I mean, I'm now asking, it's like asking a cop to do Lenny Bruce's act, but do you have some some good stories from Kevin Smith on this?
He mentions talking with his publicist, and he's trying to get out of the deal because he's like, I don't have anything to do with this documentary. Usually you have to like the subject that you're doing, and I'm not a religious person, really, Jehovah's Witness, but so his publicist is like, I can't go in there and tell Prince you can't do this documentary. Let me explain something. Prince is the kind of guy that'll come to you and say, it's 2 a.m. in Minnesota, I could really use a camel. And I can't explain to Prince why it is not physically or psychologically feasible to have a camel at 2 a.m. in Minnesota.
That's what a star is supposed to be. That is a real star. That's the kind
of
star you want. You don't want a regular guy walking around. Damn it. I'm gonna get Crasher on the phone and say, get me a damn camel. That's the kind of star I want to be, and I should dress some way, you know? I look like a NASCAR fan, which is fine to be, but I have pictures on billboards. I should be more of a nut. Maybe I should dress. Well, how should I dress?
You should be more naked on the billboards, clearly.
Clearly.
You
so the
AMA.
So the AMA. Yeah, the Happy Jack is shaking his head. No. Thanks a lot for that call. I guess we shouldn't make you do Kevin Smith's act. But I read the emails that were going around. And you and I went. Was it you and
we,
I?
Yeah, we went to see Purple Rain.
We saw Purple Rain, R-E-I-G-N. Which is a Prince
tribute
impersonator
band.
It's a Prince tribute band, and they were playing at the boardwalk, which is it's on the Strip, but it's a
I think it's gone.
I think it blew it up. I think it's where the Trump thing's going.
They had a fake roller coaster.
Yeah, and a fake
on
roller
top of the
coaster
building
out front, and a big clown head.
Yeah,
yeah. And we
went
where
that
to
clown
see...
head is.
You'd pay cash money for
I'd
that
pay cash
clown
for that.
Head. Yeah. Maybe someone listening knows where the boardwalk clown head
Call
is.
Call in if you know.
And we saw the guy, and the guy who was doing Prince moved really good and looked a lot like him, but was like 6 foot.
Yeah.
It's like a 6 foot Prince, you know, and that doesn't seem right.
But
you know,
I like Prince's music, but I've never been to a Prince concert. This was exactly the same as if I had gone to a Prince concert, except it was free.
Well, you know, I was told by Jimmy Mac, Jimmy McIntosh, uh-huh, who's a guitar player for, well, now he's in Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia, yeah.
He's playing nothing but ABBA. Jesus.
His career's not gone as well as he had hoped.
What did he? But he's got, you know, he gets paid triple, you know, because you get paid for each instrument. The union makes you do that.
Right.
So he plays like electric guitar, acoustic guitar, and 12-string guitar. So he's paid triple. So he's making money hand over fist in the pit playing ABBA songs.
Yeah, is he calling for camels in the middle of the night, though?
No, he's not. So he's not a star calling for camels in the middle of the night like I will be tonight. Hello, Glenn. This is Ben. Get me a camel.
Tell Glenn to call me, because I'll get you a camel. I can't wait to go out and get you a camel at 2 in the morning. I'm looking forward to it.
I just wanted to see how they chewed. I forgot how they chewed. I've been attacked by almost every animal known to man. So I was attacked by a camel when I was a child. It tried to eat my hair. So I was bit on the top of the head by a camel.
I've been spit at by a camel.
Oh yeah, camels and llamas spit at you too. Beware the camel spits, and I was. So this Prince impersonator, what was I going to say about him? I had something to say. I was going to say
it was exactly the same as the Prince concert.
Jimmy Mac. Yes. Jimmy McIntosh used to play Legends in Concert, you know. And he would have to rotate guitars because the fret that would put him in A on his guitar would wear out from playing C.C. Rider during the introduction to Elvis. So much of the Elvis stuff was in A that he would have to rotate guitars so that he wouldn't wear out the frets. And he played Legends in Concert for like 15 years. And when he was playing over at the Stratosphere, he said that he was convinced. Now, this is secondhand. You shouldn't believe me. Because, first of all, I'm wrong about most everything. And, second of all, I lie. So there's no reason to believe me in anything.
Typhoid Mary of bad information.
Yes, I've said that many times. Yes. That's what Free FM is all about. It's about me lying. Yesterday I said about I'm an atheist. Well, we all believe in the same God. I attributed that to Bertrand Russell, and it's really someone else.
Thanks.
Just so you have the information correct. He told me that he believed and had reason to believe that when a lot of the foreign tourists came to Vegas and would pay their money to go to the Stratosphere and see the Legends in Concert show, that they believed they were seeing Madonna, Garth Brooks, Elton John, Bruce Springsteen, they believed they were seeing those stars because it was America and it was Vegas. And I didn't believe them. You're shaking your head, right, Happy Jack? You don't think so? You don't think they believed
it? For $30.
For $30, they thought so. He was convinced of it, and he worked in it for a long time. And maybe it's just a lie that impersonators tell each other, you know? Maybe it's just a lie, but I think there's a chance that's true. You know, if I went to Hong Kong and was seeing a show and there was a Jackie Chan impersonator, how would I know it wasn't Jackie Chan? I mean, how could I possibly know? What am I going to do, fingerprint him? Like, I cannot tell Jackie Chan from a Jackie Chan impersonator. And these impersonators, I met the Madonna impersonator at a Starbucks here in Vegas.
Yeah.
And she looked as much like Madonna as you do. But I mean, once the makeup is on and stuff,
I used to do Marilyn Monroe in Legends and Cards. I don't know if you knew that.
Well, you know, this is the cool, you know, sometimes they'll ask you for an impossible question. Like if you were going to go, if you were about to be sent to hell, there were a heaven and hell, and you'd lived a bad life because you're a non-believer, and you were going to be on the gates of hell, and they would say, if you can answer this one question, you'll go to heaven. They give you an impossible question because you belong in hell. That's the scenario. Michael Godot comes there, and the guy in charge of hell, which I believe is Nixon, says to you, you can answer one question, and you're nervous because you might be able to go to heaven, and he says to you, say something good about Kenny Rogers. Stump, boom, right to hell. Nothing good about Kenny Rogers.
Chicken.
And yet there is something good about Kenny Rogers. He occasionally, and he's done this more than once, and this is not jive. This was from the local paper. Kenny Rogers will occasionally go into Legends in Concert and play the part of Kenny Rogers. He actually does that. He goes in and is Kenny Rogers as Kenny Rogers, and then at the end of the show, he comes out and brings the Kenny Rogers impersonator, goes, I'm really Kenny Rogers. This was just a goof tonight, and nobody believes him, which is a really, really cool thing. But it's like, you know, Charlie Chaplin came in third in a Charlie Chaplin lookalike contest. Yeah. Kenny Rogers does Kenny Rogers in Legends in Concert, and that is something good about Kenny Rogers, and that, Mr. Godot, will get you to heaven. Ben Gillette will be back there. Orchestra playing the Ben Gillette theme there.
Playing Ben Gillette.
This is Ben Gillette himself, sitting here with Michael Godot. You've had a lot of Gmails coming in about Prince, right?
We have a lot of Gmail coming in about Prince.
Anything really good you want to share with the class?
The Prince's purple tickets. Apparently he's hidden tickets in his new CDs that will get recipients admission to a special concert at Prince's estate in Minnesota.
An estate.
His estate. He thinks he's Willy Wonka. I think that's a good role model for Prince.
That also would be great casting. I mean, Johnny Depp, you know, is good, but boy, if they'd gotten Prince to play Willy Wonka.
They wouldn't have had to do anything else.
No wardrobe.
Just tape him at home.
No wardrobe. No wardrobe budget at all.
He saved a fortune.
He is Willy. That's who he is Willy Wonka, this big sex god. But, you know, a friend of mine, who I worked the Minnesota Renaissance Festival with. He was the big cheese there at the time, and I worked at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival as a juggler. And I did a completely anachronistic act, of course, but I did wear a big leather tunic and, you know, leather shoes and stuff.
Big leather tunic.
Well, that's what you have.
A whole cow.
And I, you know, juggled knives and balls and stuff. But my patter was all contemporary, but I was at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. And a friend that I met from there and stayed in contact with all this time, a man by the name of Jeff Siegel, works at Paisley Park. He doesn't have anything to do with Prince. He rents space at Paisley Park. He rents an office there. And so the whole office complex is Prince businesses, except for a few other guys who just rent space. And he says he's there working in his office, sitting in his word processor. He's a producer. And there's a knock on the door, and they say, Prince is rehearsing his live show. You want to come see it? And he says, okay. And they go in, and they have at Paisley Park a full stadium stage with full light setup and sound and a full stadium, except there's no stadium. It's just the end that has the stage on it. And then about 25 people, like, sit out in this audience while Prince does the full show with everything. And I said, I mean, does he commit completely? Because, you know, when I do rehearsals, I barely walk through, you know. My name is Pendulous, my partner. Tell him.
You're lying.
What do you mean?
I've seen you.
No, for rehearsing?
Yeah.
Rehearsing for the Broadway show, I don't go full out.
Okay, well, I'm talking about tech run through at a show.
Yeah, I go full out?
Yeah.
When?
Well, last time I saw you do one, we were doing a Toyota convention together, and you and Teller went full out through the entire act, did not cut any of it.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear we did that.
I learned something from it.
My vision of how I do it was
that I didn't want to do it.
was to mumble through it, you know? But I guess I don't.
You did the full 7-minute break of Teller Underwater at rehearsal.
Okay, well, that's different. That's not like I'm doing something hard. That's like Teller drowning. And by the way, it's not 7 minutes. Teller drowns for 11 minutes.
You're waiting for someone in the audience to respond, and there is no one in the audience. It's just the light guy, and he's not going to say, let Teller out.
Sure. But Prince did the full show, full out, for like 25 people, which seems to me like a really surreal, beautiful thing. To be there with, like, smoke machines and put your hands together and all that James Brown dancing and all that stuff going on. Prince is great. And I knew a guy that worked at the record company back when Prince said he was a slave at $50 million a year. Which I'm surprised. I mean, how...
We should make reparations.
If you had ancestors that were actually slaves, and Prince said he was a slave to Warner Brothers, isn't there something offensive about that?
You might think.
It might think. It's like the thing that bothers me about date rape, you know, is it's the word rape, maybe, I mean, certainly date rape is wrong, but putting the word rape in there, when people get their faces beat in and this horrible beating, and then you put that word there in date rape, which is just, you know, someone was too drunk or with a friend or something. I'm not saying it's not a crime. It's a horrible, horrible thing. But the word being in there, the same thing, you know, I think Prince should have used a different word there. You know, that he was unjustly employed.
Mistreated
would be fine. The word slave bothered me. But he said, this guy that worked with Prince said that Prince would come in and say things that God had said to him. And my friend said there was not a bit of lying. He was absolutely 100% telling the truth. God had spoken to him. Now, my friend said, there is no God. We know that. I mean, that's just a fact. And we know that if there's not a God, he can't talk to Prince. But his point was that Prince believed with every fiber of his being that God had talked to him. He said that was the kind of
thing. Let's hope he doesn't tell him to kill his children.
Exactly. I mean, that's the problem. You know, once you got... But I think that Prince's mental illness is probably nothing but good for the world. Purple tickets and CDs and dressing up to go down to the pool. Those are good qualities.
Those are good things.
So I saw V for Vendetta last night. And I don't know what to think of it, really. I was told it was a libertarian movie. It certainly isn't. But I learned a lot about Gay Fox. Guy Fawkes, not Gay Fawkes.
Guy Fawkes, Gay Fawkes.
You know, the guy on the 5th of November, you know, the bonfire night in England, who tried to blow up Parliament and get caught. He was a Catholic and
right,
King James.
Sure.
And the guy wears a mask.
A long time ago.
Yeah, like in the 17th century.
Yeah.
Guy wears a mask, you know, that looks like a guy. And I learned, what I learned checking the OED afterwards, is that the R using the word guy, like that, there's this guy over there, comes from that plot, the 5th of November.
Really?
Because they would burn guy in effigy, and the guy that they burned was called a guy. We're going to burn a guy. And then that transmuted mostly in America to be, there's that guy over there. Instead of bloke or chap, we use guy because of this guy. Guy.
Wow.
That's the most exciting thing about
the interesting thing was that his gunpowder just didn't work.
Yeah.
Because they were not good at making gunpowder. So the only reason there's still any England at all or any parliament was because manufacturing problems.
It's not only that. It's also because there were going to be, in parliament, there were going to be some Catholics. And his gang of people were out to get Protestants. So they sent a letter warning the Catholics about blowing up Parliament so they wouldn't be there that day. And there was a leak from that, and that made them go underneath and find him. And they tortured him and killed him, ripped him apart, hanged him, and drew him and courted him. I don't know how to put that in the past tense, but he was drawn and courted. And this is about a character in a dystopian future who does that. But the word terrorist is used as a positive trait all throughout this movie. And the whole issue of patriotism becomes really interesting because the lead character's patriotism is this insane patriotism to a cause. It was a bad idea when Guy himself did it, you know. He was just trying to kill Protestants. He wasn't really going for freedom. And the character Evie, you know, there's a lot of V jokes, you know. V is five. He's in Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, and the first four notes of the Fifth Symphony, da-da-da-da, is V in Morse code. And, you know, there's all this stuff. He's reading Thomas Pynchon, V, and the V, and then there's all these alliteration, like it's morning radio or something, you know. This is a valent Wagner. And, but he is the hero in this, does blow up Parliament, which is now an empty building. Freedom reigns over that. And there's a lot of talk about, you know, stuff being blamed on Muslims that's really Britain's fault and so on. And it's pretty interesting. It's one of those things that makes me feel great because, you know, Fahrenheit 9/11 came out, the Michael Moore movie, and I hated that movie. It was a lousy piece of garbage and probably did a lot to get Bush elected. I think it really helped Bush a lot because it presented stuff so cartoony and so unfairly that it was hard to come out of that movie not liking Bush more, you know. So one of the reasons I disliked it so much was it gave Bush this kind of up. But every time I saw Fahrenheit 9/11 playing in a theater, I get a tear in my eye driving by because there is no better definition of the marketplace of ideas than a movie being number one in the country that shows nothing but disrespect for the commander-in-chief. There aren't a lot of countries in history that's been true for. And when we're talking about patriotism, a movie, V for Vendetta, which is, you know, it's a cartoon. It doesn't really mean anything. And yet, the word terrorism is used in a positive light. It's morally ambiguous as to whether anarchy is the right answer, or it really does question the idea of government. It has that line, people should not be afraid of the government, the government should be afraid of the people. It has all these ideas in the number one movie in the country. And nobody in the country is saying it should not be shown. People have written articles saying that glorifying a terrorist is a bad idea and blah, 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 but they're articles. It's the marketplace of ideas. And one of the reasons I consider myself patriotic is that I'm so thrilled that, you know, Fahrenheit 9/11 and stuff like that can play in movie theaters, even though it is, by many definitions, you know, certainly anti-this administration, and V for Vendetta is certainly against really any sort of government. It's possible he's an anarchist, and there's all this morally ambivalent stuff. I don't know if it's a great movie, because it doesn't have a lot of nudity. I mean, that's really how I'm going to judge a movie, is how much nudity there is. There's nudity on dead bodies, so it has that saving, you know, it has that Schindler's List nudity. But it's Schindler's List nudity. It's not really, you know, real, living, breathing, Tupperware products under skin nudity. And, of course, Natalie Portman, I never had any feeling about at all, but then she told the Aristocrats joke on Saturday Night Live, so now I feel that we're like siblings.
I love her on Sesame Street.
Was she on Sesame Street?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I loved her then when she shaved her head and did all that stuff. So I think I've covered Playboy. I've covered patriotism. Don't forget to watch South Park tonight. Watch South Park. It should be the most watched episode ever. Watch it. Enjoy it. Have a good time. We'll be talking more about the John Lennon seance and who we're going to have do that. Have some wonderful essays in. Great stuff tomorrow. I didn't get to anything on my notes today because I get so tied up with Tiffany and Jody.
Prince.
Tied up with Tiffany, Jody, and Prince. Angela Tyler, Tiffany, Jody, Prince. That's the rest of the day.